You're listening to Everything is Workable, a podcast that examines how every experience, every situation, every moment is an opportunity to work with our mind. I'm your host, Caitlin Hatch, creative polymath and dedicated consumer of Dharma talks, Dharma books, self-help books, and the wisdom of others. I started this podcast as a way of showing my gratitude for these teachings and to expand my own understanding. Thank you so much for tuning in. So, discipline. This is a word that some of you might be uncomfortable with, and that's cool. I get that. Discipline brings to mind a sense of rigidity, conformity maybe, possibly too, and it probably isn't something that most people would associate with being very fun. That's fine. It creates a great challenge for me to convince you that discipline is fun, as well as being an excellent tool for your toolkit and something that will make life totally workable. Discipline is my superpower, which is to say that I have very little difficulty getting myself to commit to something which might feel uncomfortable or go against what I would like to do in the moment when I know and understand that committing to that thing will be good for me. I want you to consider that for a moment. The result of discipline is good for us. For me, that is one of the key motivators for cultivating discipline in my life. I want to be happy. I want to be content. I want to enjoy life. Discipline helps me on that path. It contributes to my happiness. It functions as a way to establish long-term contentment, satisfaction, and ease by foregoing any kind of short-term gratification, something that would ultimately, it might feel good in the moment, but will make everything feel much worse in the long run. Discipline itself is setting an intention and then following through. Getting up for your morning workout despite any little thoughts that might be telling us, like, we should just go back to sleep. Or not eating that second cookie, no matter how intense the craving that we have for it might be. Or making sure that you do sit in meditation every morning, 10 minutes before breakfast, no matter how much you've got on that day, how much you want to just crack on with your day, knowing that that 10 minutes of meditation every morning is more beneficial in the long run than consuming your life with busyness. The more we follow through with things, the more disciplined we are, then the more they become habit. Something that we don't even have to think about, or that requires just a lot less firm intention to carry through with it. And as the habits form, we'll see the long-term benefits, the unwavering happiness that comes from making choices that benefit our health and well-being over time, instead of just satisfying our impulse for comfort in the moment. I'm going to use a few different examples of discipline turning to habit and the short-term gratification of giving into impulses versus the long-term benefit of cultivating discipline and forming these healthy habits. The examples I give may or may not relate to specific experiences of your own, but they should be relatable on general terms. We'll all have things in our lives that we can sort of overlay these examples with and consider things where in the moment we know there's something that we could do which in the moment will feel good, or there's something different that we could do which in the moment might not make us feel as good, but over time will make us feel better. So first of all, the story of discipline and sleep. Several years ago, shortly after I had a total mental breakdown, this was 8 years ago now, I began to get up and go to bed at the exact same time every single day, or at least get up at the exact same time every day. It was a way to help me improve my sleep habits so that I could reduce the anxiety that I was dealing with. And this was all on the suggestion of my psychologist, who explained how our brains have to reset every time we have a lie-in. Now, we don't put nearly enough clout into the function of circadian rhythms and the role that they play in our lives. And they have a lot more to do with than just sleeping and sleep patterns. When we eat, how much light exposure we get after dark, how much activity we participate in. These are all contributing factors in circadian rhythm management. And by changing our sleep patterns on days when we're not working, we're messing with a lot more than just sleep. When we wake up on a Monday morning, we need to go to work by a certain time. It doesn't suck because it's Monday. It's the reason that Monday sucks is because for the last 2 days, we've gotten up whenever we felt like it. We've gone to bed whenever we felt like it. We've eaten according to those times and not sustained any of the patterns that we do during the week. Fridays don't feel great because, woo, the weekend is finally here. They feel great because our body has finally started to regulate itself again. And then we mess it all up by sleeping in on a Saturday. So at the time that I was first learning about all this, I just happened to be working a job that had a 7:30 a.m. shift start. I got up at 6 a.m. for work from Tuesday to Saturday. And in setting this pattern, rather than lying in on my days off, I kept getting up at 6 on my Sundays and my Mondays. I didn't pick a bedtime as such, but I did start to find myself naturally very tired and ready for sleep by 10 p.m. And after just 6 months of being disciplined about getting up at 6 every single day, no matter how tired I was, no matter how warm and comfortable my bed was, no matter how dark outside it was, it became a habit. It didn't matter if I didn't go to bed until midnight or even later. The habit was set. My body just knew. It was like, I will wake up at 6 even if an alarm isn't set. I can go back to sleep, but I will wake up. And here's the thing. I feel better for it. At the time that I first started this, I was recovering from a mental breakdown that had landed me in the ER. Within weeks of regulating my sleep pattern, no matter how much I wanted to lie in on a weekend, the anxiety that I was experiencing had reduced significantly. And I know that the sleep bit was just one contributing factor. I was also eating better generally and getting a lot more regular exercise. I had taken up a regular meditation, not as regular as it is now, but even then it was better than nothing. And I was seeing a therapist. So that all helped. But discipline was no less involved in those factors as well. And it doesn't make the sleep regulation any less important. I think this is a really important thing to point out, that there's no single solution to all of life's problems. There's a multitude of contributing factors that can lead us to have a mental breakdown. So there's a multitude of contributing factors that are required to improve our mental health and well-being. So nowadays, when I do let myself lie in, you know, it's like 8 years later since I started doing this thing, when I stay in bed, even for an extra half an hour, my whole day feels off. It's just uncomfortable. I'll feel sluggish. I'm more prone to neurotic flares of intense anxiety. I'm usually less productive. My digestion goes off. I just don't feel comfortable. So for a moment's supposed comfort of sleeping in, even just an extra 30 minutes, I'll have an entire 12 hours of discomfort and unease. It's just not worth it. And I'm not saying that everyone should get up at 6 a.m. every day. That's not at all what I'm saying. I'm saying, if at all possible, as I know shift work is a whole other kettle of fish, we should be consistent in the time that we get up and the time we go to sleep. Such consistency has a much longer-term benefit than the short-term gratification of a lie-in. And everyone is different, so the ideal time for you to get up is going to be very personal. Unfortunately, because of typical working hours, many people are forced to perform in less than optimal hours for what they can do. Like, I know plenty of people who know, without a doubt, they know themselves well, and they know that their most productive times are in the afternoon. For them, the ideal pattern might be for them to go to bed at like 1 or 2 a.m., get up around 10 or 11, and they know that between, say, 1 and 7 or 12 and 8 or something, they'll get a lot done. That's when their energy is its highest. I'm not dictating a set pattern for anyone. I'm merely pointing out how discipline around sleep patterns can be immensely beneficial in the long run, and how that discipline is habit forming. I started to feel so much better so quickly by not looking at my computer screen within an hour of planning to go to bed, by not drinking anything with caffeine in it after 2 p.m., by not eating anything later than 7:30. I've been able to create stability for my body and mind, which contributes to a much more productive, creative state during my waking hours. So my next example is one that I think a lot of people struggle with. It's around food. I'm using one personal to me. Most people probably have their own things around food. So again, I'm going to talk about my specific experience, but I'm sure that you can relate to it on general terms. I often get told that I am so disciplined when it comes to food because I don't eat sugary stuff, but it's not discipline if you wouldn't do it anyway. I don't like sugar. I don't like pastries. I don't like candy. I don't like snack food generally. Like, my ideal snack is like fresh peas or a punnet of blueberries. I don't like soft drinks or cake, chocolate bars, anything like that. I never really have. But I do know what it's like to have an intense craving for something because human. I used to be a coffee drinker, for example, and coffee was really big for me. And I had to give that up. That did require discipline. And I know how satisfying it is in the moment to eat or drink that thing that you're really craving, no matter how bad you know it will be for you later. We put a lot of comfort association around food. For example, I associate tea with comfort. I would say 50% of my enjoyment of tea comes down to that association. If I were told, for whatever reason, that I couldn't have tea anymore, that would be really hard. And also, my personal example of where I needed to truly bring discipline into paying attention to what I was eating, I'm celiac. I'm properly celiac, not trendy celiac. I stopped eating gluten before it was cool, when no one even knew what it was. Like, seriously, doctor said to me, you should try cutting out gluten. And my response was like, okay, what is gluten? Like, that's how hipster I am. And for a while, I thought it would be super easy because I've never really liked bread or buns or baked things very much. Gluten-free pasta was pretty easy to find. I don't know, it didn't seem like it would be a big challenge. But I cheated. Out of laziness, usually. I cheated. I cheated for probably the first 6 months, and every single time I did, no matter how delicious and wonderful the thing was in the moment, within a few hours, I felt awful. It was painful. It destroyed my appetite. It caused a lot of other irritating problems that I'm not going to go into because gross. But eventually, I had to accept that whatever short-term gratification I got from eating something breaded or thickened with flour, or actually just like eating a bagel, which I would do sometimes, I was choosing to make myself sick. I was risking diabetes, yeast infections, and pancreatitis every single time I cheated, and it wasn't worth it. I needed to be disciplined, and I started checking ingredients and choosing more wisely because I realized no matter how much I enjoyed that short-term gratification, the long-term implications of giving in and not being disciplined was going to shorten my life and make my life less pleasant. The last example that I'm going to offer is less about personal care, although still relevant to it. This is refraining from gossip. It takes a lot of discipline to refrain from gossiping. I don't care how much you think that you don't do it. We're all human beings, and part of being social involves gossiping. It's something that happens. It isn't always malicious, and I think that's part of how we justify it. We think that gossip is about spreading lies or feeding rumors, but gossip can be much subtler than that. You can be completely informed on something about another person, have had a conversation in great detail with them about it, but by sharing it with someone else, for gratification, for the buzz that you get from being the one in the know, is gossip. And I know how hard it is to refrain from it. This is a personal thing for me that I try to work with every day. I know how much fun it is to share in some juicy tidbit. And I know how crap I feel afterwards. I can think about the person or the people that were being discussed, and I'll wonder, if they had been in the room, would I have been comfortable hearing what I heard or saying what I'd said? If it was about me, would I be okay knowing other people had discussed me in that way, no matter how well-intentioned? And it's difficult to avoid without being antisocial or putting out an image of judgment to the person or people who are initiating the gossip or asking you to gossip about someone. It's probably the hardest thing for me to form better habits around because of that, because it's a social interaction and often a bonding one, and I don't want to make other people feel guilty for participating in it, but I do want to modify my own behavior. It's definitely a learning curve, but I found a few things that work. First of all, just setting the intention, right? That's a key part of discipline. Set the intention each day. I say to myself, I am not going to participate in gossip. And that helps. Even if I do participate in it, because I set the intention, I'm going to notice it. It brings my awareness to it throughout the day. It means I actually think about it when it starts to happen and pay attention in a way that I might not have if I hadn't set that intention. And then I try to play with it if I can. I've noticed it because I've set the intention, and the discipline is trying to interject it, trying to change the trajectory of the conversation. I might shift it to talking about an idea or some sort of general intention that's exclusive of an individual or a group of individuals, or bring it back to myself. I remark on my own similar foolishness, perhaps, and then it acts as a humbling practice. Sometimes the best thing is simply to change the subject. That works too. But whatever it is, I remind myself that I don't want all of the karmic debt that goes along with gossiping. As all of these examples demonstrate, asking ourselves if it's worth it is a key part of discipline. Is the short-term gratification worth the long-term discomfort, dissatisfaction, illness, whatever it might be? I don't want the hangover that comes with sleeping in, eating something that's bad for me, or gossiping. I want the long-term happiness that comes from forming positive habits, which come from following through with my intention. Discipline can be anyone's superpower. The trick is to notice. It's not about being rigid, gritting our teeth and burying it. It's about noticing what actions or steps make you feel good in a lasting way and are of a greater benefit. It's noticing what choices have a long-term positive effect versus just making us feel better in the moment, for the moment. And then setting the intention to keep making those choices. And I assure you, injecting a little discipline into your life will make it a whole lot more workable. Thank you so much for listening to Everything is Workable. If you enjoyed this episode, please subscribe, share with your friends, or post it to social media. You can also consider becoming a patron, which has really cool perks like getting art prints or a signed book in the post. Just click the green Become a Patron button on the Everything is Workable Podbean page. Thank you as well to the very talented Dexter Britton for sharing his music with the world so that I could use it for this podcast. You can find more of his stuff on www.dexterbritton.co.uk. And you can find more of my stuff at faunawolfcreations.com.